I'm Amy Smart. I'm a graduate student at Western Illinois University, and so I've been working with Maureen on a few projects similar to this one.
Right. So, here we go. It's going to go that way. We have nothing to disclose. APHA says we have to do this, so here's our slide. Nothing to disclose. We are not getting any financial gain, unfortunately, from this work. So here we go. We have a couple objectives we're trying to accomplish with this, and you know, we got three simple ones for you, and hopefully you'll go away thinking about some of this when you have a moment to actually digest some of the stuff you've heard here at APHA. First, we're hoping you're able to define emotional labor by the time you're done. Second, that you have at least some conception of the levels included in a workplace forgiveness model. And third, be able to kind of assess the usefulness of this model. So here we go. I'm guessing a number of you know that local health departments have had some challenges over the last few years. Probably starting particularly in 2008. So first, between 2010 and 2013, the median number of full-time equivalent employees has decreased for jurisdictions of greater than 25,000 people in that jurisdiction. Okay, so we have this going on. There are fewer, I'm sorry, I used abbreviations, my apologies. And RNs, oh, nurses, pardon me, I'm asleep still, too. RNs and environmental health workers in health departments, this is where we saw the greatest decreases in employees, at health departments, our nurses and our environmental workers. And then the overall number of full-time equivalents fell 12% between 2008 and 2012. Okay, so we had a lot of decreases in those departments. This is overall. Okay. Up here, it was just for populations of 25,000 or greater. All right, so we've got decreasing workforce in our local health departments. Then, for our state health departments, we got some things going on, too, that, you know, aren't particularly positive. So first, since July 2008, 95% of state health departments have had to reduce services, 95% of them. 71% have cut entire programs out of their, out of what they do. So it got 95 reducing services, 71 reducing entire programs, getting rid of them. And then 62% have had mandatory furloughs and layoffs. Okay, so we've got a lot going on in those state health departments as well. And then from January to June of 2013, the latest data that I could get my hands on, 11% have reduced services and it had layoffs, and 7% cut entire programs. This is just about 2 years ago, a little less than two years ago. And 7% have cut entire programs, had mandatory furloughs. So we've had a lot going on even in the last 2 years at our state health departments. And this is on top of stuff that's already been going on. And the big picture here, so what I've been telling you all together, we've had 51,000 state and local health departments losing, state and local jobs lost since 2008. 51,000 people gone. So somebody else has to do this work, right? Somebody else is, okay, here. Here, you do it because Joe over here is gone. You do it. All right. So it requires a little emotional labor. So this is what emotional labor is. Emotional labor is the work it takes for you to manage your emotions in the workplace. When it comes to dealing with other employees, when it comes to dealing with customers or clients, or the public, whatever word you use in your organization. And this is the idea that You have to work really hard to tell that person that has ticked you off one more time and not tell them what you really think you want to tell them, right? How many of you wanted to say something really pure and sweet and evil to that person next to you? Anybody ever had a coworker where you just wanted to tell them, take a leap into that lake over there? All right. Any of you had a boss you wanted to say that to? Okay. So this is what we're talking about when we're talking about emotional labor. Controlling that urge to just tell people to, you know what I mean. Okay. Yeah, that's right. So organizations have something called display rules. These are accepted workplace emotions. Okay. Now, some of them are actually overt. So when you think of these organizations like Walmart says, you have to ask, and I don't know if this is really a rule, but this is the kind of thing. Walmart says, you have to greet every person that comes through your checkout line and say, how are you today? Now, that's probably one of those that they require people to do. That's an overt display rule. They're documented in company policy. Then we have the covert display rules. Okay, these are the rules that say whatever it is that they say, but you learn about those by talking with people. They're not in the manual, okay, but they're the ones you learn when you're talking to people. Like, you know, you don't really have to do that, or you really should do this because, you know, Director Jones really likes it when you do that, even though it's not in the manual. Okay? That kind of making sense? Okay, I got some nods. Next. So that you can make the effort, so you can actually adhere to those display rules. You have three different things that people typically do. First one is surface acting. All right, so our checker at Walmart's like, how are you today? And they check things out, not looking at you. And you know, they don't give a crap how you are today. But they're doing what they've been told they need to do. This is our surface acting. Deep acting is somebody that's really trying to, okay, you know, how are you today? They might not really care, but they're trying to get, into the spirit of, actually being nice to their customers. Okay, they're working hard to get there. And then there's the authentic emotional expression. So some of you might go into the coffee shop every morning and you see the same server, and you've developed a rapport with them, and so they say, hey, y'all, how are you today? And you say, it's not the best day. I learned yesterday that my mom's really sick. And they're the ones that are going to go, oh, that's terrible. Okay, that's an authentic emotional expression. They really actually are sad that you've heard this really bad news. All right, so these are the three kinds of things. This is the labor we do and the ways we do it. Okay, next, some outcomes. So people that do the surface acting, how are you today? Those people, they suffer a lot of burnout, a lot of distress on the job, and they tend to have decreased job satisfaction. Then we have the people that engage in deep acting. They're really trying to get into the place of you and the customer or whoever it is that they're dealing with. They're really trying. These people tend to have a more dedication to their job. They tend to be experiencing more job satisfaction, and they tend to be actually really absorbed in their work. They're, liking what they're doing, and so they're like, okay, I'll stay another half hour, another hour, whatever it is, or they'll take work home and actually be okay with doing that work. They're absorbed in their job. There is very little research on that authentic emotional expression. Very little research on that. So I can't tell you about that one. Now, this doesn't mean these guys with the deep acting doesn't mean they're also emotionally exhausted. Okay, they're still exhausted by that effort. And it doesn't mean our surface actors are exhausted. They might not be. But these are the outcomes of those two efforts. All right. Now, we're going to give Amy a chance to tell you a few things.
Wonderful. Thank you. So Maureen has given an excellent overview of emotional labor and the challenges that public health workers sort of face, which lead to that emotional labor. So now we're going to introduce, you know, what is the solution? And what we're proposing is using the concept of forgiveness to address that issue of emotional labor within organizations. Forgiveness in the literature, there are so many definitions. And so we've kind of put one together here that works for this kind of concept of emotional labor. And what we have is a change in attitude or emotions toward an offender involving the cessation of resentment or anger and actively moving from negative to positive thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. So basically, in reference to emotional labor, forgiveness is a more pro-social response to conflict. And I'm going to go into that in more depth. So the big idea here with this, we're going to introduce a model of workplace forgiveness. The thing is, forgiveness can exist at the organizational level. In most research, forgiveness is looked at an individual level, which ignores quite a bit. It ignores that environmental organizational context. So we're looking at it at the organizational level. And how this is achieved is through what is called a forgiveness climate. Basically, a forgiveness climate is the shared perception in an organization that empathetic, benevolent, those types of behaviors are not only rewarded, but they're supported and they're expected from employees and from leaders. So the model of workplace forgiveness, Maureen mentioned this, is from these researchers that are cited here at the bottom of the slide. And there are three distinct phases that I'm going to go through with you. The first one is the emergence phase. This phase is kind of the big one. This is where the forgiveness climate emerges. It's how it develops. The sense-making phase, this is where employees are kind of making sense of the forgiveness climate. It's how their perceptions are changed and how they interpret the forgiveness climate within the organization. And then the last phase that we'll go over is the action phase. So the actual behavioral response to the forgiveness climate, what are the lasting consequences or the outcomes of the forgiveness climate? All right, so the first phase we have is the emergence phase. I'd also like to point out that this model does take into account other influencing factors, so the environmental context of the organization. So we're looking at national culture. That plays a big role in the organization, how they do things. Also, stakeholder culture is another big thing. And then geographical dispersion. So our employees or the workers in the organization, do they work together on a daily basis or they kind of disperse working more independently? So the model factors in that as well. These three core cultural values, they are the foundation of the model. This is how the forgiveness climate emerges. And so you'll see them come up again and again in the model. The first one we have is restorative justice. This is, it's not a new concept in the criminal justice system, but it's becoming more and more popular and a more common practice. Basically, restorative justice is when there is conflict or an offense that occurs. It's the practice of bringing the victim and the offender and the community all together to kind of restore that social harmony and to facilitate healing for everybody. And everyone's welcome to voice their thoughts and their opinions, and it has proven to be very effective. So restorative justice is a very important value. Also, compassion. You know, looking at others in the organization, kind of seeing when others are having a difficult time, and doing your best to alleviate that suffering. So compassion and also temperance. And we're looking here at self-control, patience, humility in the face of conflict. So again, these core values are going to lay that foundation for the forgiveness climate. All right, next we have leader attributes, and they build off of those values. First one, another important note is leader attributes, they have to align with these values in order for them to work, and you'll see here how they do align. But restorative justice orientation, that's obviously going along with restorative justice. Servant leadership, this is opposed to a self-serving leader. So these would be leaders who have a genuine interest in their employees, their well-being, and not only professionally but personally, and they do want them to succeed. Self-control, this would be a leader who practices self-control and patience when faced with those complex organizational decisions, as opposed to anger or rage. And employees do look up to their leaders, and they're going to act in turn when they see their leaders, their behaviors, and how they kind of facilitate running of the organization. Next, again, with the emergence phase, we have organizational practices. So restorative dispute resolution. This is an organized dispute resolution system that values restorative justice. So this is going to be put in place in the organization. And then also employee support programs, which are wonderful for a public health organization, and they go beyond the scope of regular HR programs, and they facilitate the financial, emotional, physical well-being of their employees, which goes back to that value of compassion, where employees really get the perception that their organization cares about them. Very important. And then mindfulness training and appraisal. This training teaches temperance, basically, how to have that self-control and patience and humility when those stressful events do occur. Okay, moving on to the next phase, the sense-making phase. Again, this is employees' perceptions of the forgiveness climate. So we've gone through the emergence phase where the forgiveness climate has been developed. It is now established within the organization. So now how do the employees make sense of it? What are they going to do from there on? So responses to conflict, a situation happens. Maureen touched on many of them with the emotional labor. Forgiveness climate should act as an empathy trigger. So employees will be more able to have that empathetic concern for others and be able to better see others' points of view and want to have an understanding of how others are feeling. That'll lead to an emotional shift within the employee. So people who feel like they've been victimized in a way should be less likely to become angry. And then those who have made an offense in some way, this is known to motivate feelings of guilt, which leads to reconciliation and restoration of that social harmony within the organization. And then lastly, restorative change, which is the broad overview of forgiveness is more accessible to the employees, and they will feel more, they have a perception that they are more likely to be able to access those forgiveness qualities. Let's see. Last phase we have is the action phase. So this is the outcomes. This is the behavior that the employee is going to be doing. First one is relationship commitment. Forgiveness is huge with relationship quality, and not only that, but it's lasting, and it's shown to have an effect on relationship quality that lasts up to, or not up to, but at least 12 months and beyond. So that's very important. Under this one, we have increased constructive communication. less aggression, and then cohesiveness within the organization and among employees. Another one, interpersonal organizational citizenship behaviors, which is basically voluntarily helping one another with work-related problems. So going out of your way and kind of helping your coworkers and taking care of those issues, which have a very positive effect on job performance, job satisfaction, as well as turnover. Back to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we have lots of negative things going on with the job cuts and the program cuts and so on and so forth. People are experiencing emotional labor as a result of all the challenges they face at work, not only with personalities, the people they're dealing with, but the added workload. And so the forgiveness model provides us some opportunity to kind of try to alleviate some of the emotional labor that people have to do. But there's further research on forgiveness that shows that there are physical changes that happen as well as a result of forgiveness. People have lower blood pressure, better overall health, reductions in stress levels, less aggressive behaviors, and lower levels of depression. So not only is it good for the organization, but we have some further implications for the individual as a result of using forgiveness as a way to deal with some of the challenges in their lives. So thank you for listening. We've been cut off.
Sure.